Harper Audio presents Black Coffee by Agatha Christie, performed by John Moffat.
Hercule Poirot sat at breakfast in his small but agreeably cosy flat in Whitehall Mansions. He had enjoyed his brioche and his cup of hot chocolate. Unusually, for he was a creature of habit and rarely varied his breakfast routine, he had asked his valet George to make him a second cup of chocolate. While awaiting it, he glanced again at the morning's post, which lay on his breakfast table. Meticulously tidy as always, he had placed the discarded envelopes in one neat pile. They'd been opened very carefully with the paper knife in the form of a miniature sword which his old friend Hastings had given him for a birthday many years ago. A second pile contained those communications he found of no interest, circulars mostly, which in a moment he would ask George to dispose of. The third pile consisted of those letters which would require an answer of some kind, or at least an acknowledgement. These would be dealt with after breakfast, and in any case not before 10 o'clock. Poirot thought it not quite professional to begin a routine working day before 10. When he was on a case, of course, that was different. He remembered that once he and Hastings had set out well before dawn in order to... But no. Poirot did not want his thoughts to dwell on the past. The happy past. Their last case, involving an international crime organisation known as the Big Four, had been brought to a satisfactory conclusion, and Hastings had returned to the Argentine, his wife, and his ranch. Although his old friend was temporarily back in London on business connected with the ranch, it was highly unlikely that Poirot and he would find themselves working together again to solve a crime. Was that why Hercule Poirot was feeling restless on this fine spring morning in May 1934? Ostensibly retired, he had been lured out of that retirement more than once when an especially interesting problem had been presented to him. He'd enjoyed being on the scent again, with Hastings by his side to act as a kind of sounding board for his ideas and theories. But nothing of professional interest had presented itself to Poirot for several months. Were there no imaginative crimes and criminals any more? Was it all violence and brutality, the kind of sordid murder or robbery which it was beneath his, Poirot's, dignity to investigate? His thoughts were interrupted by the arrival silently at his elbow of George with that second and welcome cup of chocolate. Welcome not only because Poirot would enjoy the rich, sweet taste, but also because it would enable him to postpone for a few more minutes the realization that the day... A fine sunny morning stretched before him, with nothing more exciting in prospect than a constitutional in the park and a walk through Mayfair to his favourite restaurant in Soho, where he would lunch alone on... What now? Perhaps a little pâté to begin, and then the sole bonne femme, followed by... He became aware that George, having placed the chocolate on the table, was addressing him. The impeccable and imperturbable George, an intensely English, rather wooden-faced individual, had been with Poirot for some time now and was all that he wished in the way of a valet. Completely incurious and extraordinarily reluctant to express a personal opinion on any subject, George was a mine of information about the English aristocracy and as fanatically neat as the great detective himself. Poirot had more than once said to him, "You press admirably the trousers, Georges, but the imagination, you possess it not." Imagination, however, Hercule Poirot possessed in abundance. The ability to press a pair of trousers properly was, in his opinion, a rare accomplishment. Yes, he was indeed fortunate in having George to look after him.
"And so I took the liberty, sir, of promising that you would return the call this morning," George was saying.
"Oh, I do beg your pardon, my dear Charles," replied Poirot. "My attention was wandering. Someone has telephoned, you say?"
Yes, sir. It was last night, sir, while you were out at the theatre with Mrs. Oliver. I had retired to bed before you arrived home and thought it unnecessary to leave a message for you at that late hour."
"Who was it who called?"
"The gentleman said he was Sir Claude Amory, sir. He left his telephone number, which would appear to be somewhere in Surrey. The matter, he said, was a somewhat delicate one, and when you rang, you were not to give your name to anyone else, but were to insist on speaking to Sir Claude himself."
"Thank you, Charles.